A very special guest with us today. His name is David John. He is a senior research fellow in retirement security and financial institutions at the Heritage Foundation. He is an MBA, has an MBA of finance. He's quoted in many publications, including the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and many others. He's appeared on CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and many others. Mr. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
All right. You've worked extensively or exhaustively on your 2006 proposal known as the automatic IRA.
That's correct.
If you would, describe for our listeners what that is, how it works, and why that's important.
The simple fact is that if Social Security was fully funded, and it's not,
right.
Social Security for an average individual provides at best half of the retirement income they need. So people need to have savings and investments in addition to that. One of the easiest ways to do that is through payroll deduction at your place of work, whether that's a 401k, 403b, any of those types of accounts. But the sad fact is that only about half of Americans work at a company that offers them that kind of retirement savings plan. So the automatic IRA is a very simple, easy to understand retirement savings plan, primarily for smaller businesses, and it would increase the number of Americans who can save for retirement through payroll deduction from about 50% to about 90%. And with this, it would enable, as I say, literally millions more Americans to have a higher level of retirement security. It was endorsed in 2008 by both the McCain and the Obama campaigns, so it's a bipartisan, cross-ideological proposal.
Now, the limits on an IRA or a Roth IRA for someone who does not have a company-sponsored retirement plan is like $5,000, and you get over 50 years old, then it's like $6,000. This plan, the automatic IRA, how much would you be able to put in on an annual basis?
Same amount, actually. What we did was to combine the IRA that Americans know and have used for many decades with automatic enrollment, which is the easiest way for an individual to start saving at their workplace.
Now, if we leave Americans responsible for their own retirement, the government would have us believe that they're not going to be able to take care of themselves. Do you agree?
Well, no, but at the same time, there's a learning curve. I mean, not everyone's going to be an MBA.
And right.
When my colleague Mark Avery and I put this program together, Mark was at the Brookings Institution, so as I say, this is a cross-ideological program here. We specifically made it so that an individual could start right, they'd make the right initial decisions, and then as they get more experience with savings and investing and things like that, they can take over and more actively manage their activities.
Gotcha. And you mentioned Social Security just a moment ago. Isn't Social Security effectively bankrupt at this point looking forward?
Well, bankrupt is probably a little too strong, but the fact is that Social Security has promised much more in benefits that it's going to be able to afford to pay. And unless we do something to fix the program, about 20, 30, 4, 36, somewhere in that neighborhood, everyone who's on that Social Security at that point will receive roughly a 25% benefit cut. And that's true regardless of whether you're talking about the lowest income individual or someone who's fairly wealthy. And that's more than especially moderate income people can stand. So we need to fix the program so that they've got a level of security that they can actually depend on.
Well, you've done the work and you've done the research. If you could fix it today, how would you do it?
I do several things right off the bat. The first thing I do is change the annual indexing formula for inflation.
Okay.
We are using an index that assumes that regardless of whether the price of chicken triples, that you're still going to buy precisely the same amount of chicken and beef and ham as opposed to adjusting things. And we have better indices that we can use today, which are more accurate. So I propose that to start with. Number two is to raise the retirement age, because the fact is that Americans are living longer than they ever did before. And these are changes in longevity that have already taken place. So a kid that is born, say, in 2003 is going to live 8 to 9 years longer than someone in the same socioeconomic background who was born in 1950. And the fact is that we can't afford to pay people to be on retirement for a third of their life. And last but not least, I would adjust the benefit formula so that benefits for lower-income workers would be increased slightly and benefits for upper-income workers would be reduced, because we want them to depend mainly on the kind of savings and investments that we were talking about with the auto IRA.
Tell me this. Well, you probably looked at Paul Ryan's plan extensively. What did you think of his plan as it pertains to Social Security?
Well, I thought that he had done a great deal of good work on that. To some extent, that's been overtaken by events, but that was an excellent starting place.
All right, let's turn attention here, and you've written extensively about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'd love to hear your comments about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and what you think the future of those agencies will be.
I am actually hoping that they have no future.
Me too. Me too.
That's my goal. I was actually just about to sit down and write a piece, noting that at the end of the third quarter, and I forget the exact numbers, Fannie Mae has asked for about another $8 billion of our money.
Unbelievable.
Freddie Mac wants another $6 billion of our money. The fact is that they are unworkable. They represent a huge government interference in what should be a marketplace, and they are actually hindering the recovery of housing.
How would you wind down? How would you wind down a Fannie Mae and a Freddie Mac until they don't exist anymore?
I would do it very slowly and carefully, because the housing market is still fragile. But I would make a definite start. As a matter of fact, we did make a start when we reduced the conforming loan limit. The maximum size mortgage that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac can buy. And as a result, we are starting to see privately issued mortgage-backed securities coming back into the marketplace. And I would continue to ratchet that down, and at the same time take the guarantee fee that everyone pays in order to have their mortgages included in Freddie Mac securities, I'd ratchet that up. And what this does is to reduce the inherent subsidy and give the private sector the opportunity to take their place.
Tell me this. Obviously, the real estate market is down dramatically. I've heard that different experts say they think it will continue to go down even more. Do you agree with that? And what would the key signs be to look for that the housing market's recovering?
I do expect the housing market to continue to decline, at least in the short run. And the reason, pure and simple, is that we have a large overhang of houses that are going to be foreclosed and come back onto the market, and that's going to further depress prices. What I'm expecting to see when recovery begins is that we will, first off, we will have gone through the number of foreclosures, but at the point when the sales of existing houses starts to increase on a fairly rapid level, as well as when we start to see some additional increases in home construction. But the key thing to remember is, as I'm sure you've discussed in the past, there is no really national housing market. The
right.
fact that houses are
right.
dirt cheap in Detroit at the moment doesn't do me living in the Washington area any good in the slightest.
I think that's the only market that hadn't gone down, right?
Well, it's one of the only that hadn't gone down. Unfortunately, I live in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia, and our prices did go down.
Did they? Okay. All right. Question for you, and on this show, I often talk about electing fiscal conservatives. Can we trust Republicans, if they get back in office, to reform our fiscal policy and be fiscally prudent, given the track record during the Bush years of more spending? Can we trust them?
I think that this is a case of look and verify. One of the things that we've looked at just in the matter of trying to wind down Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is that there have been substantial numbers of members on both sides of the aisle who want to continue that housing subsidy. So in any case, and I'm not a political person, I'm an issues person.
Right.
I have found that the urge to spend is bipartisan and something that you need to watch very closely.
Interesting.
You need is a fiscal conservative, regardless of what party label.
No doubt about that. All right, we're talking today to David John. He is a senior research fellow in retirement security and financial institutions at the Heritage Foundation. Mr. John, if someone wants to know more about the Heritage Foundation or about you personally, where would they go?
Well, heritage.org has a great deal, has all of our research on a wide variety of issues. There is a biography there of me, which is reasonably accurate.
Okay.
I can't imagine why they'd want to look that up, though.
I understand. Well, Mr. John, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Love to do it again sometime.
I'd love to. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you. All right, we're coming up.